Good evening. Let's like to call the meeting of the legislature for March 2nd, 2010 to order. First, I'd like to start, I regret to, that we may be making a habit of this, but I'd like to ask for a moment of silence for Bart DeLuca, a former commissioner of mental health. Bart passed away on Sunday. He'd served 27 years. He'd served Tompkins County for 27 years. From 1997 to 2004 when he retired. And
hey, Brian.
You guys.
We in a sense, owe the existence of the mental health building and I think also the SRO in large part to Bart's work and dedication to his clients and to our clients. So just a moment to remember Bart. Thank you very much. Could you rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call members, please.
Present. Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Prado?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I think she's coming.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
And I have one proclamation. And Julie, would you be accepting this proclamation on Earth Hour?
I'd be happy.
Okay, great. So you want to come up? The proclamation that I will read for Earth Hour in Tompkins County. Whereas Tompkins County has recognized the importance of responding to earth distress signals heralding the dangers of climate change, and whereas Tompkins County continues to work diligently on developing and implementing strategies that work toward solutions to the escalating climate crisis and protect our future and that of future generations, and whereas on July 15, 2003, the Tompkins County Legislature adopted its local action plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions for county government operations by 20% by 2008 compared to the base year of 1998. And whereas on December 16, 2008, the Tompkins County Legislature approved an amendment to the county's comprehensive plan to specifically address the issue of energy and greenhouse gas emissions, setting in motion a multifaceted plan for the Tompkins County community to reduce energy demand, improve energy efficiency, make the transition to renewable sources of energy, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions by an average of at least 2% of the 2008 level for each of the next 40 years, achieving at least an 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2050. And whereas Earth Hour is World Wildlife Fund's global initiative where individuals, schools, organizations, businesses, and governments across the globe turn off their lights for one specific hour in the year to show supportive action on climate change. And whereas the first Earth Hour took place in March 2007 in Sydney, Australia, with more than 2.2 million people participating in an effort that darkened such iconic structures as the Sydney Opera House and the Harbour Bridge and resulted in a 10% drop in energy dosage, double what had been predicted. And whereas in 2008 and 2009, Tompkins County citizens joined this effort by a proclamation from the Tompkins County Legislature and subsequent voluntary actions by institutions such as Cornell University and Ithaca College and by many individual residents. And whereas on Saturday, March 27, 2010, from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. local time, many municipalities and businesses and countless individuals worldwide will turn off the lights for 1 hour as part of a global event symbolizing a call to stand up, show leadership, and be responsible for our future by supporting action on climate change. Now, therefore, I, Martha O. Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the hour of 8:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. on March 27, 2010 as Earth Hour in Tompkins County. and urge all residents, businesses, institutions, and governments to participate in this symbolic act to demonstrate support for combating climate change, the gravest threat our planet has faced. So thank you very much, Julie, for writing this, I'm sure. And who'd like to say something?
I didn't write most of it. It's based on previous resolutions and information from World Wildlife Fund's earthhour.org, where you can find out a lot about what's going on. What I've been very impressed with is in 2007, as this proclamation said, that was the first hour just in Sydney, Australia. The next year, there were probably 40 to 50 million individuals around the globe that participated, and some 40 cities. Darkened lights. That was 2008 and 2009 last year. Close to a billion individuals around the world participated. I don't remember the number of cities, but it has grown really exponentially. And if you go on earthhour.org, you can find out which states are participating and what the activities in each state are in this country. So far, New York State hasn't joined the effort this year, but maybe they'll get around to it before the 27th. In our location, there are both Binghamton University and Cornell University have already signed up on the site that they're participating in. Bike Ithaca is planning an event. I've signed up as an individual. It's not just that we want to turn off lights for an hour. It gives us a chance to meet with other people and friends, contemplate the future of our planet and what we can do about it. And I'm so glad that Tompkins County is participating again.
Thank you very much, Julie. I believe we will need an executive session this afternoon at the end of the meeting today to discuss negotiations that the county's involved in. We'll go to privilege of the floor for the public. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak? Just come to the microphone and... Is this Jim Sem?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. Hello, testing.
Yes. Just let us know where you live and your name.
Yeah. My name is Jim Sem. I'm a county resident in the town of Ithaca, and I'm here to address the county legislature on the issue of natural gas development in the Marcellus Shale in our county. Using the hydrofracking technique. I did have enough copies of this small letter to send around to everyone, which basically details what I'm going to tell you. I'm here to talk about the idea of watershed protection as an important facet of addressing the adverse effects of the gas drilling using the hydrofracking process to protect the county's waterways. Basically, if you take a diagonal line from the northeast of our county down to the southwest of our county and take that land area below it, that is the area that where the Mount Marcellus Shale lies, and that is the area that will be developed in our county in the near future. The natural gas development companies have decreed that they will not drill in the New York City watershed area. That is primarily in the Catskill Mountains. That is the land area that drains into the reservoirs that provide drinking water for the city of New York. And my question is, how is our drinking water any less important than that drinking water? So I'm going to go on and say that Cuga Lake and its watershed serves as a source of water for thousands of persons in Tompkins County. All those receiving water through the Bolton Point water system, including those in the towns of Dryden, Ithaca, and Lansing, villages of Cayuga Heights and Lansing, also all the lakefront homes in the towns of Ithaca, Lansing, and Ulysses that use Cayuga Lake as a pure water source. Please take action to protect this area in our county. In conjunction with the towns, I'm sure that there's agreement that there are ways to do this. I mean, obviously, outright banning is extreme, but setbacks, making sure that there are proper setbacks, is very important. The Ithaca City Reservoir and its watershed, including Six Mile Creek and all its tributaries upstream of this reservoir, serves as a source of pure drinking water for over 30,000 persons in the city of Ithaca. So as you remember, the lower triangle that I pointed out, which contains Dryden, Caroline, town of Ithaca, Danby, those areas become important for the Ithaca City Reservoir because, of course, they voted to rebuild that plant and use that water rather than the Bolton Point water. Also, the watershed of Fall Creek and its tributaries upstream from the Cornell Water Plant provide drinking water for tens of thousands at Cornell University every day. Please take steps to protect this area within Tompkins County. And I thank you for your time and attention to this very important matter. My qualifications for speaking are that I'm representing myself, but I do hold advanced education from in this area of expertise. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. If you'd like your statement to be copied to all of us, you can pass that in. You already have it? Okay. All right, we have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I gave her 15 copies. I hope that's
great.
Enough.
That's great. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak? All right, legislators. Legislator privilege of the floor. Anybody? Jim?
Yes. I'm going to go right to the sports thing quickly. A few weeks ago, John Nord, someone brought here as a student of the month, and I realized when I got home that he was a Northeast Elementary kid that I think my wife had, and so I kind of watched him grow up. But I've been reading the paper lately, and he's improved on his past record. He was at states and did very well in the 100-meter, and he's only a junior, so he's somebody that we'll have to keep our eye on, one of our own award winners. So it's pretty cool that the kid has been able to do that. Really hardworking young guy.
That's great. Thanks, Jim. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Continuing on that note, in case you missed it, Cornell did reasonably well in basketball and in hockey. Oh, they did very well in basketball. Sorry, Pam. And some outfit up in Syracuse, I know Joe Mariana doesn't follow this, but they have a basketball team up there too, don't they, Joe? Oh, one basketball team?
Basketball.
Oh, number one rated, yes. And on top of that, in case any of you missed it, some of us have a foot in each camp on this one. It was hard to watch. It was hard not to cheer on Sunday when the Olympic hockey teams took the ice, because some of us have family in both places. And it was a no-lose situation for me because I was happy with either side winning. Of course, in case you missed it, the Canadians did win in sudden death. That's enough for sports, right, Jim? Right now.
Whatever.
I just want to remind you that on two serious matters, well, not that those aren't serious, except for the Syracuse thing. I mean, NYSEG is out for rate increases again. A couple of years ago, when Iberdrola bought them, part of the concern was they were not following their own replacement and maintenance operation, and they were trimming from their electric maintenance staff. We wrote to the PSC and were assured that NYSEG would do a self-evaluation with Iberdrola as one of the conditions of the Iberdrola purchase. In case you missed it, in last week's paper, there was a request for a rate increase. And we have been trying to find out what the outcome of that self-assessment was. And Karen, I think that was 2 years ago when they were supposed to initiate it. It's one that we're concerned about. In case you missed today's paper, there are some local folks that are concerned about the price of propane because everybody's getting sensitive about the cost of utilities. We'll start reaching NYSEG again. We'll go to the PSC again to try to get a some clarification. But if any of you catch wind of this self-assessment, I'd certainly like to see it because that does affect a lot of our residents, particularly with the cost of utilities. And just to follow up on something that the gentleman spoke about regarding the Marcellus Shale, on March 13th, in conjunction with Cooperative Extension and the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, March 13th, Saturday from 1 to 3 at the Dryden Fire Hall, there's going to be a presentation regarding, it says, emerging opportunities for grassroots organized around the natural gas leasing. And a gentleman from Tioga County, who's the president of the Tioga County Landowners Group, is going to be speaking at that. It's open, free to the public, and it's a presentation regarding the coalition that they formed in Tioga County for landowners, but it certainly centers around the drilling. And thanks for your lead-in. That was a perfect segue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. Pat?
Thank you. Thank you, Martha. While some people measure the seasons of the year by whether it's basketball or football or baseball or whatever, there are others of us that measure it by the growing seasons. And despite the huge mounds of snow that are outside, there are a lot of us that are looking forward to watching the days get longer, getting ready, getting our planting pots ready, and so on. So I wanted to mention a couple of events that are coming up that you might be interested in. The first one is on Sunday, March 21st, from 12 to 3 p.m., and that's going to be at Boynton Middle School, and it's on community-supported agriculture. This is what many of us commonly know as CSA, where there's a cooperative venture between local farmers and people to have access to the fresh vegetables that the farmers are able to grow. So if you're interested in that program and possibly learning more about it, you might want to go to that program. Another one is on Saturday, March 27th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Shops at Ithaca Mall. That's called Extravaganza, and it's on the topic of agriculture. And it's just to help people become more familiar with the agriculture community here in Tompkins County. As we all know, in rural parts of the county, that's a major industry. So you might want to stop at the mall on Saturday, March 27th, and visit some of the exhibits that they'll have up there. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Thank you, Pat. Leslyn.
Happy Women's History Month. I wanted to also say this community's heart is pretty heavy, especially the community of color. And as always, these things remind me of the work we're doing in WDIC around issues of sensitivity and caring and concern for each other. I want to share a little bit of my time with Brian, if that's okay with you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Leslie. Actually, before I begin, I refuse to be kept out of the sports conversation. Just one more. Mr. Haynes is going to be speaking to us here shortly from TC3, and they had probably their best season ever as well. So congratulations to them.
Somebody brought that up.
Yes, they did.
Very good. Leslin is going to be able to speak much more eloquently than I am, but we did have a very tragic event happen within our community within the last week, and I would hope that everyone would just keep their hearts open to not only the community, but also the men and women in law enforcement. I work very closely with them even still, and it's a very difficult time for everyone. I just hope that as time goes on, everyone will learn from this incident rather than make it worse. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Leslin because she's very much
We're
more in tune
team.
With the community.
We're a tag
That
team.
Was by design, by the way.
Okay.
Go ahead. Definitely. I say our hearts are heavy because we lost in this community one of our esteemed elders, Francis Eastman, who was... Mrs. Eastman has been here for a number of years and been a very active contributing member to the Ithaca community and to Tompkins County. She served on innumerable boards, being an advisor, being a wise one, and being a matriarch in the Black community. She has been a woman who's been the first in any number of things. And a few years ago, the Office of the Aging at their annual meeting recognized her as the Senior Citizen of the Year because of all the work that she'd been involved in. Despite her age, she kept going. She made me look lazy. She walked everywhere, whereas I'm looking for the nearest car to get into. But she had a lot to offer. Personally for me, really took time to offer advice when I was fumbling and waffling sometimes on some decisions to make. She would willingly call support and offer not what I should do, but advice on how to think through those decisions and arrive at the one that best fits the need that we're trying to address. So that has been pretty hurtful for us as a community. Later in the year, there will be a memorial tribute to her because of the winter, and we just happen to have way too much snow. The family had a short service and viewing for her. So we are she's certainly going to be missed. In addition to what Brian said, we'll follow that up with a very tragic incident with the shooting and killing of a young man in this community, a young African-American male, regardless of the thoughts that people have about who he was or what he did. There's still a human being who's dead. There's still a mother who's lost a son. There's still siblings who've lost a brother, aunt, and uncle, children without a dad. And our law enforcement officers, I know, are hurting as well because this is as much a tragedy to them as it is to this family. So as a legislator, and of course this happens in my district, I do want to express that we are thinking of, or at least I am thinking of, all of them, and hope that as things proceed through investigation, through conversations, that as a community, we will work more about sharing and healing with each other as opposed to getting to the point of pointing fingers and hurting each other. It's easy to get to that point. Today there was a beautiful service for Sean Greenwood at the historic St. James AME Zion Church. And sometimes I'm amazed at how many, how many people of color are in our community. And interesting enough, my thoughts went to sad situation, but I'm standing there and my thoughts went maybe simultaneously with the HR director for the City of Ithaca, Shelley Michelle Nunn, and saying, wow, it's a lot of potential hires in this room. So I'm always thinking WDIC as I'm there. But the biggest thought is for all of us to be sensitive, for all of us to be compassionate, for all of us to exercise that little extra something that it could be us. And how would we want people to treat, to deal, to respect us, and to be respectful? It's unfortunate that we have things like, it's fortunate and unfortunate because we want people to express their opinions, like Story Chat, that ends up being in those blogs so full of venom and hate. It is no secret to many of you that my own personal family, you know, it's near and dear and close, situations like this is close to me. My own child could have been, you know, somebody who is laying in the streets, and I have to identify his body as well. And because of choices he's made, choices others have made, but I don't expect people to be hateful in that regard, but to exercise a little bit of respect for each other. So that's all I wanted to say. And we're trying to work through this as a community as best as we can. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie and Brian. Appreciate your sharing, both of you sharing those important thoughts. Mike.
For anybody who was asleep last week, we had a significant snowstorm. It probably wasn't the worst snowstorm we've ever had here, but it was enough to give us pause. And what I think it did, at least for me, and I believe others, was to think about the terrific job that Tompkins County did, the residents here, and mostly the crews that helped recover from this, our county highway crews, also those in the city, the towns and villages who got out there in dangerous weather, made the roads safe as they could for people so people could get home. For the sheriff's patrols, the state police, and the local and city police that were out there to help people, the tow truck drivers, and the NYSEG crews that were there to make sure that electricity, that when you had a problem, was restored. It says a lot for our civilization when we can respond to something like this. Thank heavens we haven't had horrible earthquakes or fires or things like that some of the areas of the country have suffered from. But we think about each other when we have these kinds of events, and we know we're strong as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Pam.
Yes, I would like to thank the gentleman for coming and speaking tonight to the potential impact of the gas drilling in the Marcellus Shale. It's an issue that many of us are concerned about, and for those of us who have not learned enough about it, it's time that we did, because the impact that it has the potential of having on our community is very major, and the issue of water and keeping our water clean and available is one that will become even more severe as time goes on. So I really appreciate your coming and speaking to us, and I hope that other people in our community will speak out on this issue wherever they have an opportunity to. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Will.
Thank you, Martha. This afternoon, Martha and I spent several hours up meeting with Pete Meskel. As part of the orientation sessions that Paula had very carefully set up for all of us, and I would want to express a real sense of gratitude to Pete for spending so much time in answering our endless questions, but also encourage all of you to look at that schedule and take advantage of it, because there are many wonderful opportunities to learn about our departments. I plan to sign up for as many of them as I can. And it's a great opportunity to sit down, talk with people at the time when they're not in panic mode over budget. So thank you, Paul, for setting that up, and I encourage all of us to do. To date, has been a relatively minimal response, so I'd encourage all of us to take advantage. Also wanted to thank my colleague, Leslyn, for her work putting together a wonderful celebration of Black History Month on the radio in the form of memories of Black musicians. And she did this with Kyle Walker, and I heard many of them and learned from many of them, which is just superb.
I just lended my voice.
Well, I gather you also helped organize the whole thing, so thank you. And finally, I can't let Pat take the full credit for the agriculture and gardening things. I have a very important report that in my front yard, buried under that snow, I have begun to see the tops of crocuses. Folk, spring is on its way. So.
Well, you have less snow than Dryden, then. Yeah. It'll be a while out in Dryden until we see anything green or otherwise, other than white. Anyone else? Actually, Carol?
Well, following up on both Frank and Will, and tying them together, for anybody who'd been planning to go to the workforce development and the one-stop center orientation today or session today, that one, I got a call that I was the only one signed up for it. There's another opportunity next Tuesday, the 9th. At 10:15 in the morning, and I urge you to follow up on that. You know, the unemployment problem is growing, and to follow up on Frank's comments about the rate raise that's being requested following the Iberdrola buyout of NYSEG, I just want to point people to this morning's article in the Ithaca Journal and whatever other information we have available about jobs, more jobs being lost at that company or threatened to be lost, not in Tompkins County, but a little south of here in our region, up to 200 jobs. The entry negotiating position seems to be asking people to take up to a 50% rate hike or to lose their jobs with the closing of the call center that is south of here. People who are going to comment on the need for a rate hike might also point to the we're cutting costs, we're raising rates, and people are really being squeezed.
Thank you, Carol. Leslyn?
Sorry, Martha. I just, when I said Happy History Women's History Month, I'm reminded I needed to remind folks or let them know that in honor of Women's History Month every year, a group of us, includes the county, we are a part of the planning committee, plan an event called Sister Friends. It is scheduled for March 18th, thought of, but, you know, earlier than our next meeting. It's a luncheon, and it is, you know, really about celebrating a woman. Our guest speaker this year is, that's confirmed, right, is Amy Dickinson of Ask Amy. So although our brothers don't like to be in the room with 300-plus women necessarily, feel free to send your questions along if you have an Ask Amy question. There's also a women's market. It is a fabulous event. There's also a women's market, and the same thing in case you want to, our brothers in the room, recognize the lovely ladies in your lives for Women's History Month. You can come shop at the women's market. So just want to let folks know it's $20, I think it is, per head. There are tickets available through the Multicultural Resource Center and through GIAC, and it literally is a room full of 300-plus women
fellowshipping, sharing about women's history, sharing about lives, and celebrating being a woman in the United States of America. So please join us. And the ages range from elementary school to senior citizens, so it is intergenerational. We're not excluding men. We just let you know that it is about celebrating women.
That's right, and I have tickets for sale. I think Leslie probably has some tickets. Sean Martel Moore, Paula has certainly has the poster on her wall. So seriously, anyone is free to join us. So thank you for mentioning that, Leslie. Anyone else? I have a couple of things that don't really go under chair's report, so let me just mention there will be on this Thursday, the 4th, presentation of the water and sewer study that's been done by T.G. Miller's for TCAD and the Council of Governments study of the sort of the infrastructure that exists in Tompkins County and kind of estimate of what would be needed in order to enhance our ability to add housing and development where there's already infrastructure. That's this Thursday at 5:30 at the public library. Two items that have to do with gas drilling. Just before the meeting, I got an email that Onondaga County passed a resolution 17-2. I'm looking at Joe. That asks the governor to ban drilling statewide and pending additional scientific studies to be done on the dangers of hydrofracking, and failing that, to allow counties to ban within their own borders, to ban drilling. So I have a copy of that, and I'll send that around to everyone so that we might have a look at that ourselves. And sort of to take the next step, tomorrow evening is a Marcellus Challenge put on by Sustainable Tompkins and Shale Shock at the Women's Community Building on Seneca Street, 6:30 to 9. It's being called an energy fair. There will be some speakers, including myself, but also I'll be talking about how local governments have been active in reducing our carbon footprint. And there will be a lot of vendors there, businesses there that offer the kinds of services that that people might be looking for to retrofit their own houses and businesses. So tomorrow at 6:30, Women's Community Building. All right. Thank you all. Carl, welcome. Carl Haynes, president of TC3, for our annual report on the state of the state of the college. You might want to repeat your sports report because you weren't at the microphone, but if you want to make sure everybody has that piece of information.
Okay. What I'm passing around are two reports I'm going to be speaking to in a couple of minutes, my annual report, and then another report that's a new kind of report that I'll elaborate on. The initial story at the college I'll just kind of start with, and then I'm going to kind of move into some more, I hope, interesting kinds of updates in terms of what we're doing. But enrollment this year has been really the story, our enrollment growth, I should say. Our spring enrollment was up 14.5%. Our spring has settled in a little over 11%. So we are experiencing significant growth, and we're predicting about hardly something around 5% or so for next year. The challenge, of course, that we're facing is that the governor's proposal is to reduce our state support by 15.5%, and which is significantly larger than any other higher ed sector is being cut by our state government. We're hoping to get some of that restored, but in the meantime, regardless of where it winds up, it's simply going to be much more than either local taxpayers or students, okay, are going to be able to offset. So we're in the midst of undertaking a lot of initiatives to prepare for the fact that we aren't going to have any more staff to support additional students, and we're going through a lot of internal
discussions and training and software updates and things of that sort. So you'll hear more about that as we kind of get into our budget discussions later, but I'm sure you've been kind of wondering about that, so I just kind of want to let you know where those things are at. What I'd rather spend some time on is some of the things that we've accomplished this past year, and that's what my annual report does. If you look to the third and fourth page, I'm going to kind of highlight a few things here that I want to draw to your attention and kind of elaborate on just a bit in the few minutes that I have. If you look at the external relations page, you'll notice that for each of external relations is one of our six major goals that we have. They're spelled out in a little bit more detail in our online and so on. We don't repeat all that narrative here. But for each of our goals, we try to highlight some of the major accomplishments that the college achieved in that area. And we're very focused, of course, on our assessment work, as I believe I've partly shared this before, but you know, the Middle States Commission that reaccredited us last year, we were kind of held up as maybe one of the best in the state and still are by SUNY in terms of how we conduct the assessment not only of our courses, of our academic programs, of our non-academic services, but institutionally as a whole. So what I try to share here is some of those indicators and what is the evidence of that we have that kind of indicate that we're making progress toward this respective goal. Under accomplishments here with external relations, I just want to draw to your attention that, again, it hasn't gotten probably no coverage here in Tompkins County, but of course it's had a number of articles in the Cortland County media about the Cortland County Extension Center that we're in the midst of building. We, as you know, we negotiated a swap of property that Cortland County owned for the property that our foundation owned, where we had our extension center. It's a 3,500 square foot facility that we've really outgrown, very, very limiting in terms of what we're able to provide services for in that county. We're trying to model something much like we have here in Tompkins County with the upper two floors of the TC3 Tioga Place, where our extension center is currently located. The county has agreed to remove most of the buildings on this site, leave us with a bare piece of land. We're in the design stage right now for about a 10,000 square foot facility that will be pretty much designed and replicate what we have here in Tompkins. So that's underway. We hope to break ground late this summer and be occupying that new facility in July of 2011. In terms of the evidence, I want to highlight for you the second bullet down, where our concurrent enrollment program, which I've talked a lot about over the years, we have about 30-some-odd school districts that we partner with where students are able to get college credit for courses that they complete, usually in their junior, senior year in high school. We now have received national accreditation for that program. We're one of only 44 colleges and universities in the country that have that accreditation, and so we're very pleased that that program has achieved that kind of recognition and accreditation. On the teaching goal, I'll draw your attention to the point that talks about the new centralized technology learning and support center. This is something that we've integrated into our learning commons, where we now have some students and some staff that are cross-trained in not only the various software that we have available, but the hardware, and are able to kind of basically, they have cell phones, and any student, any place in the learning commons is having trouble with something that might be a frustration of the computer, they're able to contact someone and get assistance of some sort. So we've centralized that service. That has been 2 years in the making in terms of bringing what used to be an academic kind of computing center and a non-academic administrative kind of computing center, bringing those together into one cohesive unit and functioning more collaboratively. And the indicators of evidence, I'll highlight the learning communities. They continue to do very well. What learning communities are is where we bring faculty together in two different disciplines to teach the same group of students in those two disciplines in kind of a team teaching sort of way. You'll see the examples there, basic writing and math, intermediate algebra and biological resources, and other examples that are listed. But these have proven to be very beneficial to the students who complete them. They really like this kind of experience where they get to have two different kind of disciplines coming together in the same classroom. And, of course, the faculty are challenged and enjoy that experience as well. With resources, this board and our Cortland board, of course, approved a couple of small capital projects last year to add some classrooms and a cafeteria renovation. I'll just underscore that we did use capital chargeback for money for that, so there was some local tax dollars involved. But we did get state support for half of the cost of that. Those projects completed the classroom project under budget, the cafeteria project, I think, about on budget. It was under slightly, but not significantly. But both are serving the college very, very well. As a matter of fact, they couldn't have been more timely in terms of the need for classrooms at 14.5% enrollment growth this fall. And, of course, with a meal plan now that we have available for our resident life students, that has proved to be very popular as well. And indicators, I'll draw your attention to the increased retention. The reason this is listed here under resources is because we are so enrollment-driven. You know, 80% of our revenue comes from the number of students we have enrolled, and of course we're always working to try to make sure that the students who start there can complete. But we did see a significant, not a significant, but a small uptick. And, you know, we'll take these small incremental improvements over time, because it's a real challenge to, as we work with the diversity of students, both in terms of their academic and economic kinds of circumstances, to help them get focused and achieve some level of success. With the access goal on the next page, I'll draw attention to two points, but we have the Pathways program. I think you're well aware of that, been funded by a local benefactor, Arthur Kukas, who, by the way, in December gave us an additional $1 million worth of support for that program. We're now up to a $4 million endowment that he's provided for us. The first 9 students enrolled last year, and 8 of those 9 are continuing. One is taking a pause with a pregnancy, but the others have achieved very well. And we'll be adding to those. We hope to grow that program up to about 40 or 50 students with the level of support that he has provided us. And then, of course, the LEAP program is a program that we partnered with the Tompkins County WID, the Cortland-Cuga WID, who jointly funded a program to reach out to target youth in that 18 to 25-year-old, or 24, I forget exactly which year, and to provide them with that kind of extra assistance. Young people who are, again, economically, academically challenged in some way, that they probably never went to college, never had an opportunity to go to college, but with the right kind of support services, have the potential to succeed. And again, that program is off this year with 29 students, and I think the first semester, 20 of the 25 students to start, I said 29, but 25, I think, are continuing in the spring, which is a good success rate. And then I pointed out the under indicators, the significant uptick that we're experiencing in the financial aid area. Again, we're serving 18%, 19% almost additional financial aid to the same number of people. And again, it's a lot of software changes that we've made there, and the processing changes to try to accommodate that kind of demand. But more and more of our students are dependent on some kind of financial aid. Unfortunately, increasingly numbers are having to rely upon borrowing rather than outright grants and so on. And then the climate area, I'll mention the work of our Diversity and Equity Action Council, DEAC, as we refer to them on campus, doing a lot of good work. They last year completed a climate survey of our campus climate that was both student input and faculty and staff, and we've kind of established that as kind of our benchmark to try to we do that every 3 years, and a number of programs that they have underway. Also, that council is very kind of connected with our communities as well. And I spoke to that at the recent forum that was held here in Ithaca in terms of some of the connectivity we have with the local community. And then under the indicators on that page, the survey of college and student engagement. It's a national survey focused on community colleges around the country, so we get to benchmark ourselves not only against other community colleges in other parts of the country, but against the SUNY community colleges. And the benchmark here, of course, the student-faculty interaction, we rated higher than any of our, the mean of our SUNY community colleges. So we're very pleased with that in terms of the kind of engagement that our students are experiencing with our faculty. And last but certainly not least, of course, the learning goal that we have. I'll focus there on the new programs that we talk about here, which is wine marketing. But yesterday, an executive council of our Board of Trustees approved 4 additional programs for next year. 2 of them kind of moving us in a little bit of a different approach or a different niche, if you will. We approved certificate programs in our paralegal program and our chemical dependency program, targeted to people that already have baccalaureate degrees primarily, or perhaps even advanced degrees, who really want to retrain and enter these fields. They can do so by focusing on just the core courses in these programs and not have to complete the full degree. Oftentimes they can do that in a year or perhaps less, depending on their background, and wind up with some level of certification that would allow them to enter either of those two respective fields. We're able to offer those. It's a nice way of repackaging existing courses to create a different opportunity for students to get some training and enter the workforce. The accounting program, we approved an associate degree in accounting. We've had a program for really since the college started, in applied science. This is a transfer program in accounting. There'll be no new courses there. And then the fourth program is a new program, and that's an entrepreneurship. And again, a lot of interest in that in the community. We've had a course in that area, but now we're rounding that out with a full degree program. And we already have a couple of colleges that we're talking to that'll bring a baccalaureate program in entrepreneurship into the community to provide for our students as well. And then the indicators, I'll draw your attention to the last one on the page, where we now have taken our salient, what we call our salient program, but it's our data analytic tool that we have at the college, where we're consistently working at trying to drive data-driven decision-making deeper into the organization. We now have, it's a work in progress. I'm not saying that we've accomplished our ultimate goal, but we've made significant progress in terms of faculty, department heads, other administrative offices that are using this tool and gaining insights in terms of what we're learning from data of various types. I won't go into all the detail on that. That helps inform them in terms of whether things are working the way we think they should be working or not, and developing strategies from that. So, again, in a minute I'll ask for any other questions on this, but just a couple of minutes on this, and I'm partly out of time. This is something new. Last year, we, together with Cornell and Ithaca College, completed an economic impact study that involved all three institutions. It was initiated by folks over at Cornell. John Gutenberger wanted to try to do something. He got IC and us together to try to say, let's do an economic impact of higher education in this community. And so we did, and that was kind of rolled out last fall. But this is our rollout of our piece of that. And what's distinctive about our piece, which is highlighted in this brochure and why we did this piece, is that economic impacts tend to look at the typical kinds of stuff. How much money the college is spending, how much money the people that work there spending, and your ancillary corporations, how much money that, and you figure out the multipliers of all that money, and you come out with some kind of an impact. This does that and more, because the company that we contracted with is a different company than what IC and Cornell contracted with. This company, they've changed their name. They're now called Economic Modeling Specialists. They're based in the Midwest someplace. Only work with community colleges. They've developed some metrics that I think the principals initially developed at Stanford. They've been around for about 20-some-odd years. And they can measure things in terms of, increased worker productivity and what is the value of that, increased earnings of people who complete associate degrees, reduced social service costs, reduced cost of incarceration. And they have ways of measuring this. I hope you don't ask me about what their modeling is, because I couldn't begin to describe it. But it has stood the test, I think, of time and the test of the scrutiny that I think many people have given it, and also looks at kind of quality of life issues. So it's, and as you see, the big number there, $155 million a year is the combined impact that TC3 has on our community when you add together not only the economic kinds of spending that the college and related entities do, but the social related impacts as well, in terms of what they're either saving the community or how they're contributing to increased productivity and so on. So we've extracted a few highlights here from that report. If anybody would like to read either A, the full report, or B, the executive summary that we have, let me know, give me a call. I'll be happy to get that to you. But the bottom line is really the back page, where it kind of summarizes the key bullet points, if you will, in terms of what TC3 really does contribute to our community in terms of higher education, workforce development, a robust economy, economic and social change, safer community, and so forth. So with that, I feel like I've run a marathon here already. Happy to answer questions about either of those documents, anything I've said, or anything else that I haven't talked about that you'd like to know about.
Thank you very much, Carl. Appreciate that. Appreciate the report and the beautiful handouts. Any questions? Peter.
Let's see. I hadn't thought about this before, but off the top of my head, one of the nice things about a model is not only the answer that it gives you, but how it allows you to play games with different parameters to, if you think that the particular output is the thing that ought to drive your decision making. And I wonder if you thought of doing that with this model about impact to the community and see which of your programs have more impact than others, just by changing, you know, playing with the with the inputs and with, you know, with the same amount of money, are there ways that you could have make more impact on the community?
That's a fascinating question that we frankly we haven't explored. My off the top of my head kind of response is that I don't think it gets that gets down to that level of detail where it's really looking at the impact of this academic program and that academic program. It's looking a little bit more broadly at having an associate degree compared to not having an associate degree. And they have metrics that look at things like you know, people with X amount of education, the less likely they are to be incarcerated or less likely to have be dependent on public services of some sort. And so you know, they develop these kinds of metrics, and then they take our data in terms of the number of graduates we have and how many live in the community and all that kind of thing, and then model that in some way to create a dollar value for that for the public policy.
So it's just the more students, the better, more or less.
Well, the more students completing and completing some level. I mean, there's some metrics there, for example, that look at our worker training. You know, how many numbers of people were involved in workforce training that didn't lead to a degree, but they were involved in some of our non-academic training programs. That adds some level of value to their productivity in the workforce. So it looks at those kinds of things. So I don't know that the model would allow us to go the direction you're suggesting, but that's a fascinating thought. It'd be nice to be able to do that.
Frank?
Other comments or questions?
Yeah. I don't care.
Hold on, Ian. You call on Frank.
Go ahead. Okay. Ladies first.
You do a beautiful job, Carl. We really appreciate it. It's, you know, it's always nice to be able to cite and look at the work that you do out there. I'm interested in the effects of the economy on what you're seeing, both in terms of your student enrollments, whether students are trying to stay around longer to not have to face looking for a job, and also as it affects transfer ability, in particular to our local institutions, but maybe to other places as well. Are you seeing a trend more or less ability, greater or lesser ability to transfer? In that regard, I did notice that in some of the recent information coming out of Cornell and its restructuring, that they're looking at transfers, although it wasn't clear to me whether they were looking at increasing it or decreasing the ability, and what will that mean for students to whom you've made commitments or they've made commitments that if they maintain a certain grade, they'll be able to transfer?
Two or three questions there. Let me
yes.
try to unravel that. But I think in terms of what the economy, the state of the economy, impact on the college in very broad brush terms, I think it's a major factor in contributing to our enrollment growth. I mean, that's happening around the country, where whether it's for retraining, where people have either are being laid off, losing their jobs, or wanting to upgrade their skills in an effort to keep their jobs and be more employable, students are tending to gravitate toward community colleges for that kind of educational experience. Or families who have been affected by the economy or are concerned about the economy and are looking to send their children to community college. This is what I like to say is a smart start, okay? To start at a less expensive institution, they can save money and so on, and then eventually go to a place like Cornell, Virginia College, SUNY Cortland, Binghamton, and so on. So I think our enrollment growth is a reflection in part of the economy. In terms of the impact on transfer, I think that
What we are seeing in part of the last 5 or 6 years, it could be a little bit of function of the student housing that we have and so on. The average age of the student is getting younger. And with that, the interest in our transfer programs is going up. So if there's more students interested in enrolling in our liberal arts programs and or the other career-focused programs, they have the transfer option. It's why we're developing the transfer program in accounting, for example. And I think, again, I think there's a data point in one of those pages that I was just on that I think it's 56% of the transfers last year, the year that was quoted, went to local institutions or SUNY institutions, something like that. So we are seeing that. And I think there was a third part of your question.
The part about whether you see the restructuring at Cornell or other factors of our local four-year and longer colleges, the ability to transfer and stay within the county.
Yeah. I don't know about that. It's something we got our eye on that ball, shall we say. I think it's too early to tell whether the challenges at the other institutions are going to ripple into lesser transfer opportunities. There is a concern about that. And one step that we've taken to address that, of course, is bringing institutions like Delhi on our campus to offer baccalaureate programs. They opened in January. They've been there for all year, but the fall semester was spent in terms of kind of going out and doing the groundwork. But they have 25 students enrolled in their baccalaureate programs, which are in business, hospitality, and nursing. And they're one of the institutions that we're talking to about the transfer program and entrepreneurship as well. So, I probably get asked once a week in some venue, you know, are we ever going to be a baccalaureate institution? And, you know, the answer is never. Okay, that's not our mission. Our mission is to be a great community college serving our community. But where there's a need for baccalaureate education that isn't being met by other institutions in the area, we can facilitate that. And that's what we're doing with Delhi. Over the years, we've done it with other institutions, and we'll continue to facilitate that if we need to. For example, in nursing, you know, bringing that baccalaureate program that Delhi has in nursing onto our campus and making it available to local people is one example of that.
Thanks. Frank?
Carl, first let me apologize in my diatribe about congratulating sports teams.
Apology accepted.
I'm sorry about that. You know, I'm going to date myself. Looking at these brochures, you probably don't remember this, but I do. The expression, you've come a long way, baby. Yeah. Step back.
We're about the same age.
Step back a little bit. I mean, this is wonderful stuff. But if you had, considering Cortland and Tompkins counties and what the state is prescribing or at least forecasting, now catapult forward a year, you're standing where you are a year from now, and considering both counties, can you say something about where you would generally, where you hope to be? What are a couple of the greatest challenges you're going to be faced with in the next year from either county, because we're married to Cortland? Can you give us some idea of what you see as two or three of the biggest challenges facing the college coming down the pike? I mean, this is... Go ahead.
There's just one big one, okay? And that is we're going to continue to see growth, and we're going to continue to see an erosion of resources, and we're going to continue to have to find ways of serving more people with fewer people in the worst case. So I don't see that turning around on a dime. You know, we've been through these kinds of recessions and downturns over the course of the last 25 or 30 years. And, you know, there's always been a fairly, almost a V-shape to the outcome, okay? You can usually suck it up for a year or two, and you know it's going to get better the next year or two because you see the economy turning around and so on. It's not me seeing this. I'm just reading the newspapers like everybody here is, okay? But the predictions are, forecasts are for much more of a U-type shape to this recovery, and who knows how long that bottom part of that U is going to be around. So very concerned about the fact that, and I prepared the college community for this, okay, we were going to have a midwinter day retreat last week. It got canceled because of the snow, and I'm rescheduling it for a week from yesterday. We're preparing the college community that this, what we're going through right now and the discussions we're having with our budget challenges right now, we'll probably be having very similar discussions next year, okay? So we're having to respond to the short term, but we're also having discussions and working on initiatives that are going to address the same things in a longer term fashion.
Are any of the folks sitting in back of you recruits?
I see a lot of young faces.
They look like
they're Cornell and IC students or high school students.
No, they drew the short straw on how to do government stuff, and they had to come here and witness what we're doing is what it is, right? But they're all potential TC3 applicants.
Well, we'd be happy to welcome them.
If you have a few more handouts, I'm sure you can spread this around. Anyone else? Kathy?
Can I just request, thank you, it was a great report. On behalf of the legislature, maybe we could all share one of those executive summaries, because we love data. And it looks like a really cool study.
I'll send it down to the office here, and then you can figure out a way to either copy or circulate around, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Let me check and see if we could share that electronically. Maybe that would be the other approach, and that way you probably have a way to kind of get it out to folks that way. So definitely follow up. And by the way, I know I brought more of these brochures than there are legislators here, so I would assume that they can be made available here for the community that might come into the county office building. So they're just extras for the office here. Well, I
thank
went
you.
Way over my 10 minutes.
Julie has a question.
I'm sorry.
I was going to be greedy and ask for the full report, not just the executive summary. One copy in our office.
Of the full report?
Yes, please.
Okay. Will do.
Thank you, Dooley. I have a couple of questions very quickly. Didn't you just launch a program for lead training and lead certification, whether it was, and I can't remember whether it was for construction or it was design?
Yes. I don't think that was a degree program. I think that the courses, I'll put that in quotes, I think can earn credit if somebody wants to. That was a grant program that targeted construction technology, people entering the workforce in construction technology that prepared them for how to do LEED kinds of certification things. But it wasn't a degree program. It was a kind of a training program.
Okay. So is that ongoing? Are you saying that's over? Just in case anybody's out there listening.
I don't know.
Okay. Somebody can check on the website.
Check our website.
Okay. And on behalf of Pam, I'd like to ask about the census. We're very concerned that all the students in Tompkins County are counted fully. And I'm sure, I don't know for a fact, but you probably have somebody coming to our census committee meetings. Okay.
Yeah. Our Director of Student Activities, I think, has been, Ralph Shortell, has been coming to those meetings.
Yeah, they've been involved. They actually have, I mean, they had some questions, but they've been very involved with it.
Good. So. Good to hear. Thank you.
Great. So that on campus and off campus, very important. So, all right. Well, thank you very much, Carl. We appreciate your coming and taking the time to share the good news.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. And if anybody in the back would like a handout, we do have a couple if you want to check before you leave. For the chair's report, just a couple of things quickly. I do want to second the idea about the department visits. If anybody has been on the fence about whether it's worth taking your time to go see some of the department heads, see the buildings and the sites, the facilities that we have. And if any of the scheduled times don't work, I've heard from many department heads, please, they're very welcoming. They would like you just contact them, call them up, and find the time that works for your schedule. I think everybody would be very willing to accommodate your schedules. I wanted to thank Paula and Lee Shurtleff and Sheriff Meskel for yeoman service last Thursday and Friday in the multiple snowstorms. We had some challenges, but it was really very comforting to know Joe was out of town and Paul, as deputy, was very much in control of the whole situation. And we were in touch with both Lee and Peter. And just it was an interesting test of everybody's communication abilities. And I think things went very smoothly. And thanks very much, Paul, for your work on that. And Tuesday, March 23rd, Joe has sent out a note about the next legislator department head retreat, and that it's going to be a very important session leading up to the budget retreat that legislators will have late in April. But this will be not a repeat by any means, but beginning to think about how to approach our budget for the coming year. Do we have a time yet for that or a location, Joe?
No, we were going to poll the group on best times for that afternoon. It'll be in the afternoon, and so that'll come within the next week or so.
Okay, so but please sort of mark off that afternoon. It was, I know it's...
What's the date?
March 23rd, Tuesday. There's no such thing as a perfect date. We were trying to avoid committee meetings and people's travel schedules that we knew about, but that's one of the quarterly retreats that we have with department heads. So we will send out more information as soon as we have it. Okay? County Administrator.
I have an especially brief report tonight. Some of the items that I was going to cover have been covered. I would like to echo what's been said, though, about our workforce and how they responded to the storm. They really did a great job. I especially want to note the work of those folks who sit in those big snow plows and deal with numbing fatigue over the course of a very long period of time as they address these issues. So I really think we need to pat all those who are involved on the back, and I'd like to add my praise to that group. A quick update. I know you're all interested in the status of the Health Benefits Consortium and where that is. We're continuing to push forward with that. We're still involved in getting feedback from the labor unions. It's been requested by the State Insurance Department about the advisory committee and voting seat on the board of directors. That is continuing. I'm hoping that will come to closure within the next week or so, and we can move forward with the consortium after that. I will remind you what I think you already know, that this delay is costly. It's about an extra $20,000 a month in health costs because of the higher cost of the old plan compared to the consortium plan. That's for the county. Other municipalities are bearing a premium for this delay as well. So we're trying to move forward as quickly as we can, and I'm still optimistic that we will be able to bring this to closure reasonably soon. The retreat we talked about, executive session, again, we'd like an executive session after this meeting to talk about a real estate transaction. Just a final personal thought, thank you very much for your thoughts and kind words over the past week. I will say sincerely, it was a great comfort to my wife and her family, so thank you very much for that. That's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? County Attorney.
I don't have a report now, but I do want to say that on Friday at the F&I committee, Barbara Ekstrom and I will be doing a report on the future of the Recycling and Solid Waste Center. And for people interested in the future of recycling in the county, I hope it will be interesting.
Thank you, John.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Finance Director, David?
No report.
No report. All right. Thank you. Any questions for David? We have, are there any resolutions to be added? There are. All right.
Thank you for no report, because most of them have been so bad that I'm really happy not to hear from you.
And you missed the last budget committee meeting, Joe. So
well,
Jim,
so. And
Jim, is that ignorance is bliss?
And that was unavoidable. What?
Ignorance is bliss?
Well, no, it's just trying to add a little levity to a really bad situation called sales tax.
All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, then the consent agenda, resolutions that can be voted on as a group. Please speak if there's something that you'd like to pull from the agenda. Resolution A, approval of appointment to the Tompkins County Council of Governments. Resolution B, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under. Resolution C, approval of 2010 succession of members of the county legislature to serve in the absence of the chair and vice chair. Resolution D, approving revisions and abolishing policies and procedures of the Tompkins County Government Administrative Policy Manual. And this is the revised. The resolution has not been revised, but the policy has been revised. And Resolution E, approval of designation of successors. Resolution F, adjustments to the 2010 budget, City of Ithaca Municipal Sales Tax Agreement. And again, that's revised. And two appointments, Peter Meskel to the Traffic Safety Committee and Faust Rossi to the Ethics Advisory Board. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Frank moves, Will seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Our first committee report. Government Operations, Mike Lane, Chair.
Pleased to report that the Government Operations Committee did meet on the 18th day of February, and we had a full agenda, ending up with a very nice tour of the county clerk's office. We're going to be trying to visit some of the or all of the departments that report to our committee over the course of the year. I want to report on two things in particular, since you were so kind to us to put all of our work resolutions through on the consent agenda. We don't have to deal with those tonight. But I'd like to mention that we did have a report from Jay Franklin from the Assessment Department. And he talked to us about a written report he had for the continual equity maintenance program. I think that's a fancy way of saying our annual reassessment of the county. And some of the things that they had noticed this year, he reported to us that on the whole, things have been fairly stable in the real estate market in Tompkins County. There have been some pockets of changes. For example, in the town of Ithaca, in the Grandview subdivision, the Southwood subdivision, and some of the high-end subdivisions in the town of Lansing, we have seen some decrease in the assessed values based on the sale prices that have been out there. We've seen some increases, however, in the town of Ithaca, notably the common land planned unit development area. And the Department of Assessment has taken time in its three-year program to do a parcel-by-parcel review in the towns of Enfield, Dryden, Lansing, and Newfield. I think overall it's pretty good news for Tompkins County that we aren't experiencing the huge decline that some of the parts of the country saw, and that's holding our tax base pretty stable. There's been some backward trend in some of the sales that we know of, and of course there haven't been quite as many real estate sales this year as there were in 2009 as there were previously, but that was when the economy was heating up a little bit. There will be every property in the county will be reviewed. Generally, they do windshield surveys of them at least over the next 3 years. One other point that he brought up was the question of how oil and gas leasing is affecting the values, assessed values. And at this point, there's not enough data in to say that it's doing anything one way or the other. Because it may be increasing values for some properties where people are happy with oil and gas leases, but it may also be decreasing property values where people are a little reluctant to purchase properties that have oil and gas leases on them. So they're gathering data on that, and I think we need to stay tuned as to what will be happening to our market, if anything. There have been oil and gas leases for many years in Tompkins County, But of course, the hot thing here is the Marcellus Shale issue, and we're all keeping our ears to the ground about the fracking problems that we're all worried about. So how that will affect the real estate sales, we're not quite sure, but we're watching it. The other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit was the broadband issue that has come to our committee. I want to thank Paula Younger for all the background work she's been doing on this issue for us, and Joe. particularly there are two things happening right now. One is an application by the Southern Tier East Regional Planning Board, STURB, and I believe it's through the Appalachian Regional Commission to obtain some funding for a region-wide broadband access initiative. And we're going to be putting a letter of support for that. We're not a member of STURB and haven't been a member for years, but we are within the Appalachian Regional Commission geographic area, so we believe we're entitled to be served if that application becomes a reality. The other thing is that Google has put out some indicators that it's interested in finding some target communities to do some broadband work, and there is a group forming with Cornell. There'll be a meeting this Friday up at Cornell to begin talking with that. Ken Schlauder at Cooperative Extension has been active in that, and we'll have more to report on that later. With that, I think I'd be glad to take any questions, but those are the real highlights.
Jim?
And Mike, you may not know the answer to this right now, but it seems like my memory says a few months back, 6-8 months ago, we were involved in an application for some broadband that Clarity Connect was putting forth. And where is that? Do we know anything about that?
Last I heard it was...
Paula, do you have some information?
That was the first round of broadband stimulus applications, and it's my understanding that Clarity did not receive an award, but it is also my understanding that they intend to apply for the second round, which is also a part of the application process that Mike just spoke to that STURB is involved in.
Thank you.
Of course, and there's the Clarity Connect is a little different. It's focusing on a very finite group of municipalities here in the county, whereas the STURP application is more of a middle fiber optic infrastructure piece.
Thank you for that.
Carol?
My understanding of the Clarity application is that it did not go in the first round. There was some technicality, and that so it's going in the second round. It isn't that they got turned down. I just wanted to clarify that.
I'm not able to comment one way or the other. I mean, I know that those are some. It's a very complicated application process, that I can assure you. So. But all I know is that there was not an award out of that first round, but that's and now they're planning to go into the second round.
Thanks. Thank you. Any other questions for Mike? Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam McAsee, Chair.
Thank you. The Planning Committee is meeting tomorrow at 3:30 for our monthly meeting, and that is all I have to report.
Except that then you can report on the Census Committee.
And now we can move right on to the Census Committee. And the Census Committee has met. And there has been tremendous work being done by Kevin Sutherland. He's just been immersed in this. And I don't know what we would have done without him.
What's the hat say, Kevin?
The hat. Okay, yes, the hat. That's right. It's the distinctive hat. Kevin really has just done a wonderful job. I wanted to... I wanted to just let you know some of the things that we are going on. I mean, we are continuing to have great participation by many different groups in the county. But this next a week from tomorrow, Wednesday, March 10th at noon, is going to be our kickoff event at the Tompkins County Public Library. And this will be census arrives in Tompkins County. And so we welcome you to come and join us. It would be great to have a rowdy and enthusiastic group there. On April 1st is Census Day. Census Day is a national event. And what we're hoping to do is to, in every municipality in Tompkins County, have some event, some recognition, some celebration, some awareness, so that it goes on everywhere. We now, on the county website, we have a place where you can find out about the census. We have a section where it has local information in terms of where the sites of our QACs, questionnaire assistance centers. When we have completed the scheduling on the times, that will happen. So that's great, and we also have that also has links to other websites. I just wanted to share with you a couple of facts that I think are really quite interesting. Is that for every census form that is returned by mail, instead of having a census worker go out to it, the Census Bureau saves between $60 and $70. That for each, they go out to people's homes, they will try six different times to get in touch with that person. So there's a level of persistence there, which is great. I'm optimistic that at some point they will find the right time and get to all these people. Let's see, just a couple of other things. For people with visual impairments, the language assistance guide will be available in large print and Braille. And there are the forms are all available. They're available in five different languages this year, which is very exciting. And they have other languages that the directions are in, but you have to go to a QAC generally for that. And I just want to repeat the sites for the QACs because I think everybody needs to know them. Now, next week is when these census forms are going to begin to be mailed out. The QACs open on the 17th or the 19th, and then they'll be there for until the 19th of March. So we have the Tompkins County Library, student agencies in College Town, the Village of Dryden that will share a site with TC3. The Tompkins County Human Services Building down on West State Street, and the Ithaca Mall, or the Mall at Ithaca, or otherwise known as Pyramid Mall. So, it's just been great, and Kevin has done a wonderful job, and we're on the verge of after he contacted all of these different groups in the community and in the county, tomorrow probably we'll be sending out all of the brochures, all this information for people to have. The one thing I also wanted to just mention is that Cayuga Press just graciously offered, they are contributing, they're printing up 2,500 of our sheets, information sheets for us. And Marshall, how many, what are these?
Posters.
For our TCAT buses. I'm sorry, Marcia, how many?
60.
So this heavy-duty poster paper, we're going to be able to put these in all our buses, and we'll have some extras to go around in the community. So everybody is playing a wonderful role here, and we are very appreciative. So we're going to have a great turnout. And we need you to go back to your districts and to, in any way that you can, whether it's your community groups, your churches, any way, your local municipalities, to make sure that they are involved in this, because it's in all our interest to get this done.
Thank you, Pam. Nathan and then Frank.
I just wanted to say, Pam, that I think you're doing an excellent job as chair of this committee, really keeping the energy up. And also, I think Kevin's doing a great job as well. Kevin, I went to the Ithaca Asian American Association's meeting on like a Sunday morning to talk to them about the census, too. I mean, he's really just kind of going above and beyond. And so it's really commendable.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Frank?
Thanks, Marcia. The space on the on the buses is, unless I'm mistaken, is being donated by TCAT. Because
yes.
Normally they charge for the.
Yes, that very good point, Frank. Thank you very much for pointing that out. That's right.
And I'd like to just highlight something about post office boxes. People who have a post office box and that's how they get their mail. I know there's been confusion. The census will not mail them to those addresses. However, they will make up to six attempts to knock on each of the physical addresses, the physical doors, to deliver the forms and get compliance. Is that right?
I think I just said that. Didn't I say that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I want to make sure it was people with post office boxes won't get one in the mail. So,
right.
That's the point. Okay. All right. Any other questions for Pam? All right. Thanks very much, Pam. Budget and Capital Committee.
Thank you, Martha. I was unable to attend the meeting. I do have a written excuse that I will forward to the IFCA Journal when they start to count. It's been signed by a couple people like Guthrie and Sayre, where I was tending to some family medical issues. And while I was away, Kathy is the vice chair, and she took over the running of the meeting, and she is going to do the report of the meeting for us.
Thank you. I say that because when we met on February 22nd, it was kind of like three members of the county administration took turns giving us bad news so that we couldn't shoot all the messengers around. And I know it's their job, but it was a lot of tough information. So I'm going to reel some of this off based on the minutes draft that I got. And thanks for the heads up on that, because budget, it's complex. First, we went over the resolution that you okayed on the consent agenda about adjustments for the due to the municipal sales tax agreement. And I'll explain this briefly. The municipal sales tax agreement appropriates about $1.6 million, and some of the appropriations are indexed to the 1% sales tax in the city of Ithaca for the prior year. So in 2009, the amount was based on the estimated 2008 sales tax. But as we know, in 2009, the sales tax went down. So as a result, too much revenue was allocated for some accounts, more than we ended up taking in. And since the municipal sales tax agreement provides the county with the option to catch up the following year, we passed the resolution reducing appropriations and offsetting revenue. We had some discussion about how and whether we could make those. I knew the budget would do it. Why? Does it every time? The resolution reduces appropriations, and we talked with Kathy Schlaughter of the Health and Human Services, the Human Services Coalition, trying to figure out whether and how we could make them whole, and we're going to see if we can figure that out, because there's another catch, and that is the Human Services Coalition doesn't allocate the 2010 budgeted funds in 2009 because they can't do mid-year collected in 2009 because they can't do mid-year adjustments. So they have to wait till March of the following year to find out what the sales tax receipts were for the previous year. So this kind of puts them in a tough position, because their 2010 budget assumed higher sales tax revenues based on our 2008 revenues. So it's a kind of a catch-22 for them. Their budget planning process begins in April, which is good, because then they will know. It'll be past March of the following year, and it'll be based on the previous year's sales tax revenues. So their budget planning for this year will be based on our really bad year last year. The county knew in mid-2009 that revenues were going down, but agreed to leave agency budgets alone until the time when the amount that the sales tax revenues declined was known, because we had so many unknowns, and we really wanted to make sure that Health and Human Service agencies, which have been really hard hit, had a chance to get through what we hoped was a somewhat temporary situation. Okay, so part 3, we learned from the finance director that in January the county had a cash balance that was $7,749,000, but that's really low. And the reason it's really low is because it's barely enough to make our salaries and to pay our revenues. And it's a problem in January because we don't get a lot of state funds, and state funds have in particular been cut. And so January is the cruelest month for us. Revenues from property taxes start coming in at the end of January. The county was successful, however, in stabilizing its cash position after a precipitous, I love that word, drop in December 2009. And I want to say that so that people won't be worried. We're okay. We got distributed a sales tax distribution summary, and it was very helpful because it showed the difference in activity between inside the city and outside the city. Outside the city saw a steeper decline than inside the city, and it's kind of flat inside the city, but outside the city tax revenues are down by 6%. Sales tax receipts, for example, for the month of January alone are down by 3% from 2009. We were advised that we should monitor this very closely in case we need to make mid-year adjustments, because you can't mess with this revenue. As much as I complain about sales tax, we rely on it here in this county and in so many others. The finance director, I'm picking on David tonight, he distributed a local government snapshot. The New York State Comptroller's Office gave that to us, and we reviewed it. The way he described it was real helpful to me because he mentioned that the sales tax, the regressive nature of the sales tax, means that it's strongly tied to gasoline, fuel sales, and home energy costs. Now, not all the counties in the state tax energy, but in Tompkins County, for us, this represents a large amount of revenue. David mentioned, and I just want to give you a heads up now, that when you have all these really highly technical questions in a few minutes, I'm going to look across the aisle to David and Joe, and they're going to help you answer the question. The deal is that, let me find my spot. He's been closing out the 2009 books, but final numbers depend on reimbursement of claims to the state, and those funds are just starting to come in. The only 2009 fund that showed significant decline was the solid waste fund, and that was because of a really 50% decline in the sale of products. One good thing, or at least I think it's a good thing, County Administrator Joe Mariani said that the New York State Association of Counties, referred to as NYSAC, is pushing for more transparency from the state on sales tax information so that counties can understand what's driving the sales tax. He believes the state budget director is supportive of seeing this happen. I hope I interpreted that correctly. We were given a quiz and a quick show and tell on the state pension fund. Here's my visual for the state pension fund. It's not in color, but is that a scary graph? It was scary to us. This represents amortized and unamortized financing of the state pension fund, and I will try to explain. We got a little review that the state pension fund suffered a huge loss after the stock market crash, and we'll need 5 years or so to recover from that loss. We got the chart with two different estimates of pension costs based on proposals from both the governor and New York State. Two plans, one from the comptroller that would be permanent, increasing the minimum payment, help me if I get this wrong, that the county would make, and another plan from the governor that's a short-term, five-year proposal allowing governments to borrow for pension costs that exceed certain thresholds, and one of the proposed thresholds was above 9.5%, at an interest rate, start listening now, of 8%. Wouldn't you love to get, David was smiling, we would all love to get interest rates of 8%. Well, that's the governor's plan, is that the counties would pay an interest rate of 8% to the state. And these thresholds, by the way, would increase each year. It's likely that New York State would require local governments to borrow from the state at these wonderful rates. Now, some of us looked at the major assumptions that were underlying the chart. For example, that the underlying pension costs would stabilize at 11% of payroll, that wage growth would be 2% a year, and that the state will charge 8% interest on borrowed money, and we thought, you know, it's good that we're knowing about this, but there's so much in flux about it that I don't know how much we can really say, you know, this is cut in stone, and we have to start planning for that in particular. I'm very grateful that David and Joe are on this and that they're going to keep us posted on it, and I will defer to them the questions on details of these proposals and keep in mind that they're not finalized. Mr. Mariani reported he'll be exploring the possibility of only borrowing a portion of the funds, if that's one of the options that were given. There was a snapshot of the unamortized figures and the amortized figures, and I'm not going to go into them because if I can put the students to sleep with the little preface, this part would just really blow it. But I think other people can talk about it in a way that is more succinct and makes more sense. I just want to say this part. We are going to have to make a decision about aspects of figuring out how to cover pension costs, and we're going to have to probably address this during the budget process, if not think about it going into it. For example, pension costs are currently, I hope I have this right, about 5% of the Tompkins County budget, and they're projected to rise to 10% of a $75 million local budget. I could be wrong on this. They're looking at me. Currently, the fringe rate is 40%, and it's projected to climb to 60%. Okay, I'm in the home stretch now. Norma Jane had to help us out, so she submitted a report and talked to us, I think it was Norma Jane, about estimated state aid reductions and distributed a document outlining the total county impact of the governor's proposed budget. Now, understand that this is the governor's proposed budget, and again, we don't know what's going to be happening in the coming weeks, but it's estimated that the proposed budget could reduce reimbursements by $840,000. And there was a summary of the proposed cuts that included cuts to the assessment department, assigned counsel, the DSS COPS program, DSS direct funding, DSS summer youth employment, the district attorney salary reimbursement, mental health, Health Department, Office for the Aging, the Planning Department, programs, the County Soil and Water Conservation District, their regular funding that they get, TC3, $1.6 million proposed cut, Youth Services, $27,400 proposed cut. I had to leave then, and so I turned it over to Peter, but I'll just say now that our next meeting is on March 8th, and we were supposed to look at a proposed budget calendar. But I want to say that in a tough budget year, I really think that staff helps lay people get an understanding of what it is that we're facing and put it in ways that we can grapple with. And I know that we also need the support of the community and professionals in the community to help figure out our next steps. But just coming up with this summary was an exercise in figuring out how to talk about what's a really complex issue that we don't even know what it's going to look like tomorrow, because I heard some things today. Well, later on that. Thank you for the opportunity to do this.
Thank you, Kathy. Jim?
Thank you very much, Kathy. That was well done. The only comment I would like to make, April 1st is when the New York State budget is supposed to be put together. I read a story in the paper on Sunday about Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch and his concerns about putting together a state budget within the next 29 days. We need to get three people or four people in the room and figure out how they're going to do that. The leader of the legislature on the assembly side, and I'm not sure who the leader is on the Senate side these days, but those people have to do something. New York State, 62 counties are holding their breath seeing what that budget is going to look like. So for all of us, we have to do that too, and it's critical what's going to happen over the next 35 days or even longer than that with New York State and what it's going to mean to taxpayers in this county and, more than that, recipients of our services. And you're right, we are there Monday, and again, thank you very much for doing that. Great job.
Thank you, Jim. And I would say most of the states in the country are in a similar position. That's not much comfort.
Peter had to finish up the meeting after Kathy left, and he has rehearsed some things.
Peter, can I ask you, lean towards your microphone, okay? I think, yeah, you need to be able to... So your voice will be picked up. Thank you very much.
Well, I have quite a long report. After Kathy left, Martha appointed herself to the committee so that we had a quorum. I considered everything I'd heard and decided that the wisest thing to do was to adjourn. So I made such a motion. It was seconded by my colleague across the aisle, and we unanimously voted in the face of all of this news to adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Let me just ask, Frank had his hand up, but for Joe or David, do you want to add anything to that?
If there's, or clarify. It's
or clarify. Is there anything that you want to fill in?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Kathy's identified the issues that we will have to focus on in the next few months. I think we've kind of laid the groundwork for that. We're beginning to talk about pensions and the amortization plans. Sales tax is going to be with us for a while. We will monitor and calibrate. So, no, I think Kathy has really highlighted the major themes that will be on our agenda for the next several months.
Okay. Thank you. David? Okay. Frank. Frank and then Mike. And then Will.
Thanks, Martha. And in deference to Kathy, I'll direct the questions to you. I heard Kathy mention a couple. I heard Kathy mention that the Solid Waste Division was concerned about the income that we were receiving from recyclables, that it had gone down. You and I had talked about that a couple of weeks ago, Joe, and that's one question. Could you give us some sort of a feel for, maybe it's premature, but there was something going on there. So let me just throw the three of them out. Second one is on the pension costs. The state's generous plan to let us borrow at 8%, or any county to borrow at 8%. I thought I also read where you were exploring, or maybe David was exploring, the possibility of going out and doing it on our own and not going to the state. In that vein, if you decide to do that, I know a couple of banks that probably would lend the county money at less than 8%. But seriously, if you can comment on both of those, I'd appreciate it.
Solid waste, I think the commodity prices probably bottomed out last year, probably at the midpoint of last year. They did begin to come back toward the end of last year, so I think there was a recovery. I think we're doing better now than we were during the depths of things 6 or 8 months ago, so it is beginning to come back a bit. Plus, to their credit, Solid Waste didn't sit around and watch the problem happen. They really adjusted their spending patterns. They tightened their belt. They kept their budget in line, so they did a real nice job in adjusting to this different environment that they're in. And I do think, again, it's gotten better over the past few months. With respect to pensions and amortization, we're still learning, and frankly, you know, there are some details of the borrowing plan that probably aren't in concrete yet. There are two competing plans, one from the governor, one from the controller. They probably have different rules. They have different philosophies behind them. Currently, the one constant seems to be that we would borrow from the state itself. But I think David and I both have an interest in pursuing, whether through lobbying or just asking the right questions, whether we could, if we chose to borrow, and that's a huge policy call, whether you want to borrow your way through a pension situation like this. But if we do choose to borrow, could we go out and borrow the money on our own in the markets, probably at an interest rate of between 4 and 5%, I would assume, for 10-year money, as opposed to 8%. So it could be something that we would lobby the state legislature to get, or it could be that the state really hasn't given much enough thought to it yet or provided clarification, and we just need to find out that answer.
Mike, and then Will.
Just a quick follow-up on that part. If they want us to borrow money from the state, my question is, where's the state going to get the money? Borrow it? So we're going to pay interest on interest. But I'm very concerned from the state level, and Jim, you mentioned a little bit that we're not going to see a budget April 1, that it's going to go a long time, because in tough times like this, where you have three budget offices, the governors, the senates, and the assemblies, they all sit around and argue about what the revenues are going to be. And they do that so that the time can go by longer and they can actually see the revenue trends come in to the state, and they hold off making decisions. We saw a few years back where the budget wasn't done until summer, and we could be looking at something like that again this year, especially with the dysfunction in the state Senate.
It's a cheery group. Will?
Joy, I think you've already answered this, but did I hear maybe Kathy or you say that we would have that we might be forced to borrow from the state, or just that's an option?
It's borrowing generally is an option. We could simply pay our pension bill as it comes due. That's the traditional approach to paying pensions. However, because of this spike that everybody sees coming over the next few years, and we're already into the first step this year of that spike, the governor and comptroller have said we will allow you to basically borrow to take that off. If you choose to borrow, to take that spike off, if you choose to borrow, you would have to borrow from the state itself. So they're not saying you have to borrow to get your way through. They're saying if you do borrow, there's only one bank, and that's the state at this point. And that's, again, what we're trying to, maybe there's a different path that we can help forge through some lobbying.
Peter and then Carol.
Well, I don't want to be disingenuous, but it's at least clear to me that what's going on, it's like all bodies, is that they're all in financial difficulty at the same time, and trying to squeeze somebody else, like we want the state to help us, and the state wants not to help us because both of us have budgets to balance, and the state might very well think, well, these costs are not going to be possible to be borne by a locality. So given that, why don't we lend money to them that we borrow at 5% and then charge them 8% for, and then what happens is that aids their own budget. I mean, if this were a private firm or a bank, I'd know exactly what was going on, and it may well be that New York State is acting like any financial institution that's pressed for money and wants to find other sources for it.
That's called arbitrage, and that's Joe, great. Yeah, good idea.
We should carry this into a committee meeting and really get into the details of this. But the state really won't be going out to borrow that money. They simply will defer the bill that we owe them for a period of time. The reason they want 8% interest on that money is to regain the equilibrium of the pension fund. They need an annual return on investment that averages 8%. So they're saying if we need 8% on our portfolio generally, that's what we're going to charge local governments to basically borrow that money from us. So that's their financial philosophy, and that's why it's 8%.
This is playing the sky. Unbelievable.
Carol.
Yeah. First, I want to thank both you and Kathy. I mean, it's this stuff is very tough, but it really helped to have such a clear explanation of exactly what we're facing and how. My question is about whether the money, the fund that we use to pay the state for what we need to on the pension, is a dedicated fund. Do we have options to make our own budget adjustments so that if we do need to borrow, that we're borrowing in other areas as opposed to this one? Or is that something that we don't know yet? I assume it's something you're looking at.
I'm not sure I follow.
I think I do.
Okay.
I think what you're saying is we're obligated to pay the state X number of dollars. If we had another project, could we borrow money to do that project instead of using taxpayer money that's generated by the property tax or the sales tax?
Well, no, not necessarily. Even if it,
Yes.
It doesn't have to be capital. It doesn't have to be a project. It could be just part of our budget. Can we borrow in other parts
part? What you're saying is right.
So pay the pension bill directly to avoid that high interest cost, but then maybe borrow for something else in the budget right, to kind of keep a balance in our own plan.
Yes.
It's conceivable. I haven't thought about it. David probably has. I haven't thought about that. It's something that we could think about. I think generally our policy decision is going to be how much we will rely on borrowing to get through this current situation generally. That'll be the real good discussion that we will need to have. And then we can kind of figure out, can we borrow from the markets instead of getting the 8% money, and how do we lobby to get the state to approve that? Or you're suggesting, Carol, is there a different area of the budget that we can adjust so we don't have to use 8% money, we can use 4% money someplace else?
It would make sense.
Okay. And I was curious, when do we have to make this decision?
I don't think we have to until the next pension bill is due, which would be late in December 2010.
Right.
So we have time to think about it. We will want to make those decisions, though, to set up our 2011 budget.
Okay, Jim.
Unless there's another budget question.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Well, it's more of just a perspective on things. And Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but during that meeting, basically the costs of the pension fund that we have been paying versus the potential increases, just that increase amount is I think we figured it out, is somewhat equal to 9-10% of our overall local budget.
That's my recollection.
Yeah. Yep. So I mean, we're talking about a significant amount of money.
Yeah, our pension costs will go from 11.5% this year up to a projected 23.5% of payroll over the next, I think it's three years, by 2013. That's the state's projection of where our rates will be.
Jim.
If there's no more questions, that concludes all of our report.
I thank all the people on the committee for their persistence, and clearly the finance people.
Thank you very much. Public Safety Committee, Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee met yesterday. We had a report from OAR and to have a department introduction, since many of the members of the Public Safety Committee are new to public safety, including myself. We also had a very interesting presentation about the evaluation of three alternative to incarceration programs, specifically drug treatment court, felony drug court, and day reporting. And basically, Dina Bodner from DSS did a review of these three programs and looked at the demographics of those that are involved in these programs and their success rates based on various that you can look at in various ways. I think one of the most interesting ones was the percent of people that actually get employment after participating in these programs or pursue higher education, like getting a GED if they didn't have one, for example, before. And that was it was a very striking report. It showed that, at least from my perspective, it showed that these programs are successful. They don't help 90% of the people. I mean, more like, I'd say half the people that go through them at least. But that's 50% of people that are participating that aren't going back into our jail system, or in the case of felony drug courts, going into state prisons, which will cost us substantial sums of money. And not only that, but also probably hurt their own lives instead of integrating them into society. And so it was a very good report. One of the feelings of the committee was that it would be a more complete report about outcomes if we had more clear data on recidivism rates, and that's something that Dina was definitely aware of, that she's worked with probation and other departments on getting, and definitely I don't think it's over. I think they're going to continue to pursue getting more information on recidivism rates, but at least on other measures of success that correspond to lower recidivism rates, or correlate, I mean, with lower recidivism rates, these programs are successful. So that was the report. The next part two of the ATI evaluation will actually be an evaluation of costs. So we looked at outcomes this time. The next time we'll be looking at costs. So with the second part, we should get an even more whole picture of the effectiveness of these and the bang for the buck for alternatives to our incarceration programs. So overall, very good report, and I think we all learned a lot. Next, we had a presentation about the computer-aided dispatch system, and I have a couple pages here on all the different acronyms that were used, such as CAD, MDS, RMS, GPS, NICEPIN, LEX, ALI, ANI, CRIMES, SJS, GIS, LETS, TRACS, CAT. Oh, and then that's CAD again. So anyway, a lot of discussion, but basically what this is that it's... The computer-aided dispatch is basically the information system foundation for the 911 automatic location information, mapping and telephone databases used for dispatching and incident documentation. And then in the police vehicles and emergency vehicles, there's the corresponding mobile data system that links up with the computer-aided dispatch system. And that has things like vehicle positioning, records access, electronic dispatching capabilities, so you can beam information directly to these vehicles. You can have dispatch that could see where police vehicles are on a GPS map of the county to better coordinate activities, things like that. And then also a records management system, which is a database for emergency systems, which is primarily law enforcement, which integrates with incident information that's created in that computer-aided dispatch system. So right now, we have pieces of this type of system, but it's old, it's outdated, it's no longer upgradable. And they all kind of speak a different language and require a lot of translation between these systems. And we had an actual map of all, and I don't have it here with me, of all the different systems that exist out there. But basically, I mean, it was like looking at a very complex molecule. I mean, there was one system here connected to this one, connected to this one, connected to this one, connected to this one, that doesn't speak to this one, which is connected to another system all around too. And so something like at least I want to say a dozen systems that were all speaking to each other, but don't necessarily speak the same language. If we upgrade this system, we will have a computer-aided dispatch system and its corresponding systems that will speak to each other, which will mean that we could provide, I think, more efficient and more quicker responses when it comes to emergencies. So that presentation was given, and the committee approved. We authorized the group to go and put together an RFP and put it out there to basically find out what something like this would cost. There is about, I think, $1 million or so that was earmarked during the communication systems project when we were initially getting that going. So, but of course, spending that we do, of course, will come through this legislature. And so I'm sure this is just the beginning of what you'll hear about the system. But I think it's going to be something that will be very, very good for Tompkins County. And with that, concludes my report.
Thank you, Nathan. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nathan, I want to go back to the ATI piece.
Yes. Yes, sir.
First, I think it's a step in the right direction that Dina has at least a piece of this completed. Secondly, where can we get a look at that report, even though it's an interim one? And I have a couple of other questions.
Yeah. I can leave a copy here in the office. I have the report is in there's three different documents that talk about program outcomes for the three different programs. I can leave that here.
Could you do that
for you to see? Yeah,
I would like to review it. The second is when we began this process some time ago, a couple of us, including myself, submitted a whole laundry list of questions and concerns. Mm-hmm. And suggestions about measurements. Do you know if those were addressed?
I don't know exactly which ones, but I can talk to you about the different things that we looked at. We looked at the retention rates of people that stuck with the program, upon exit, how many completed the program, how many were still under supervision, those with probation sentences. We looked at unsuccessful exits and why those happened. We looked at the age ranges of graduates, We looked at the education level of graduates, the drug, the primary drug that was used by those people.
Are all, excuse me for interrupting you, but are all those contained in the three reports?
Yes, they are. Yeah, yeah, and broken out in those three different ones.
The one of the key questions, of course, is the cost.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we may be helping a particular group of people, is it cost effective?
Right.
Among other things. Right. I mean, it isn't entirely about cost. That's the next piece
that
will be
about? That is the next piece, yes. That's correct.
And can you say again why it's difficult to get the recidivism rate?
Yes. All right. Who can explain that the best here? Peter.
I think I understood it.
Yeah.
As I understood what was said, was that it was privacy issues. That the what you start with is a name of an individual. Pat Pryor, for instance. She was in the program. And I want to know, A, whether Pat Pryor has been arrested again since the program was initiated. Mm-hmm. And the real problem is I can't know Pat Pryor's name. That the way the data comes in is it's case number 73.
Right.
And because the drug court has these guarantees of confidentiality, they are unwilling to let the person who was doing this study know who case 73 was. Now, if that's the situation, then there's no way we could figure out the recidivism. Now, whether that's excessive, whether that privacy is mandated by law or whether it's an excessive a focus on that particular aspect of it, it was not unclear to me. She did say that if we wanted to study the recidivism, we wanted the study carried out by a recognized social sciences research group, then it might be possible to get that match up, that code where number 73 is Pat Pryor. I'll stop talking about you. But without that, it's clear that there's nothing you can do about recidivism.
Right.
So that was the way it was explained to me. I was surprised at the whole thing, but that's all I can say.
Yeah, and in addition to that, there used to be within the state there was staffing that was available to help you with that type of research, but that area has been cut by more than 20%, and they are no longer able to do that. So now they can only kind of present to us very, very raw data. And as Peter's talking about, I mean, we would need to either dedicate lots and lots of hours or hire out somebody to actually do that.
I think there's also a level of, I mean, Pat Buchel is going to be working on this, going to continue to work on this.
That's right. Yeah, we're not just ending it.
Right, because some of it is within the state's probation system.
Right.
And I think this is not unrelated to Nathan's description of the many systems that don't talk to each other.
Right.
You'd think there would be a grand database in the sky. There isn't.
Right.
So it's a matter of going through paper records, and it's one of those mysteries we've asked for many years. But Jim?
For me, that's the fundamental question of all these programs, that It feels like to me that we have two-thirds of the information and there's one-third that we're lacking. Mm. And without that other third, it's a very difficult situation for a legislator to make a determination on further expenditures or whatever when it comes to budget time, other than a feeling that you get. And that's a difficult thing, I think, for all of us, or at least it is for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping down the road, as a member of that of Nathan's committee, that we can do that third portion of the study and figure out about the recidivism, because it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense if we don't have those numbers.
Yeah.
Nathan, yeah. I'd like to add a comment.
Yeah, I mean, along those lines, I mean, definitely Jim's right. I mean, if we could say if somebody participates in drug court, they will the chance that they will go back to jail, or the recidivism rate is 70% less. That would be ideal. You know, and right now this report, the closest that it gets is, well, and I forget the exact numbers, so I'm just making this up off the top of my head, but basically they're saying if, say, 40% of them get a full-time job, then a full-time job usually means that recidivism is lower by 60%. So they're basically extrapolating, like, you know, over two categories, so it's not perfect.
And Dina made a point of saying, and Pat, I know your hand's up, but we'll be there in a sec. Dina made a point of in the context of her report, that New York State did a study in, I think, 2003 of 11 different drug court programs. There's a federal GAO study. And both of those can use much bigger samples of people, have control groups, which we don't have. And in terms of statistical significance, the bigger the sample size, the more reliable your statistics are. So both of those summary studies, review studies, really, it's very consistent that participation in these kinds of programs improves outcomes, reduces recidivism, and that also that success is correlated. Even if you don't graduate, the longer you stay in the program, the better the outcomes are. So this is an imperfect science, clearly, but so there's that. And I think it might be something that we can talk to Dina about making a presentation to the full legislature when it's all ready. I think it's an important topic. Michelle, just let me know. There's a copy in the office. Is it on the desk? Okay, Michelle has a copy of the whole report, the folder that she handed out yesterday. She can also email it to everybody. There's about three or four attachments that I got by email today. So, Pat and Brian, Peter, go ahead.
Thank you. You mentioned that the next step will be to work on the cost end of it, and I was just wondering if there's an anticipated completion time for that. And yeah. Then I have another question, too.
Martha, I don't know if you'd be able to answer that better than I would.
Well, she's going to report at your next meeting on the cost issue.
Oh, is it? Yeah. She's
reported
it.
At the next
at the next public safety meeting.
Okay.
Right. She'll report on the cost issue. It wasn't clear when Pat together they might have something more in recidivism. This spring, I think.
Okay. Then I had a question about the first responders information, the data and so on, the other part of your report you were talking about. Were you referring only to county first responders, or does that information include all of the various municipalities?
All the various municipalities.
Okay, yeah. Wasn't clear about that. Thank you.
And actually, what's interesting is that we I think it was through state grants and whatnot. All of the vehicles that would use this mobile data system that would talk to the computer aided dispatch. We actually have all the hardware in those vehicles now. So they will be able to speak to each other once we get the software, okay. But the hardware is there. And there were 40 agencies, right?
Brian, I think you're next.
Yep. I'm going to go back to recidivism just slightly because I agree with Jim. Yeah. That is one of the main components to an evaluationist program. Which apparently we can't get, although as being on the fringes of these sorts of things for a long time, I'm not quite buying it. I know that inmates or whatever are assigned numbers. They don't go by their names. And I do believe that there is a way to do that. You referenced the 2005 study by the GAO. And I just for the heck of it today reviewed that document, and apparently they can do it because this is only one page, and the word recidivism is on there 12 times,
So they must be able to gauge that. So I don't know why we can't. One thing I did hear yesterday was that New York State no longer has the resources to be able to research this, but they did say that they may be willing at some point shortly to basically open up their records for anyone that wants to come and make that sort of review. And when you're doing a cost-benefit analysis, and that measure is so critical, that may be something we'd want to consider, either by an intern or somebody, to actually collect that data.
Thank you, Brian. Frank, and then Jim?
Yeah, thanks, Martha. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you reminding us of that, because going back to Peter's comment, this has been an ongoing, as long as we've had these programs, almost immediately upon Bill Benjamin and Tim Joseph initiating them years ago, the question became, are they cost-effective, and are they doing what it was that we really intended them to do, and that's to help rehabilitate and put people, you know, get people back together. One of the other concerns at the time, and it became more apparent, was do we want to build an addition on the jail, or did we want to build a new jail entirely? And this was offered as a pilot, if you will, to see if there was an alternative, obviously, to incarceration that was able to provide a cost-effective way of helping people out. We have been at this now for over 10 years. Maybe it's closer to 15 years. We still are asking that same question. And there are counties that are able, now, with the exception of what Brian just reported, that the state has pulled back some resources. We can't control that. But the question that has been asked about the recidivism rate and about the data, there's mixed messages here. We're getting mixed messages because depending upon who you talk to, even our own CJATI program, the representatives to that program are able to get some of that very data. So it depends on what county you're talking about, and it's really a concern, especially now when we're going to be looking at budget items. And I'll keep hammering on it politely, as I've been asking for years for information on it. I'm still not convinced that it's a cost-effective program. And you'll have to continue to prove it to me, because part of the buried in the questions that I asked were who selected the items that were going to be studied, and how will we evaluate their effectiveness? We can orchestrate an outcome sometimes too. I'm not saying that's what happened because I haven't read the report, but I appreciate you offering it, Nathan, so that we can review it. Thank you.
Jim, did you have your hand up?
No, I did not.
Oh, you did. Nathan.
Well, I just want to say that, I mean, I think, Frank, that what you're asking for and the direction that you want to go is, I think that's the direction that we're going. We're looking, I mean, obviously we're going to be looking at costs next meeting. Obviously, the recidivism rate issue is something that we still need to look into, and we haven't given up on. So I think that we'll continue to do this evaluation, and I think we're in terms of the evaluation side of things, you know, really on the same page.
Peter,
well, I hate to have to express a contrary opinion, but I have not been working on this for 10 years. I've been working on it for maybe 3 weeks, but in those 3 weeks, I did read the document that I was given by ATI, which is about a 130-page document on does it work or not, and I listened to this presentation. Now, just to truth in advertising, my impulse is to be supportive of this program, but my other impulse is to be a skeptic every time data is presented to me. So those two things work in contrary directions. But I think you're all mistaken when you think that recidivism is the holy grail for this thing. The reason that I say that is when I look at this long study that was done by the state of Colorado on this question, it turns out that the real question is not what's the recidivism. You have to ask the question, well, what's good? Okay, if I tell you the recidivism was 30%, what's that? Is 30% high or is 30% low? Right. And you don't really have the answer. So. But what is the answer is, what is it compared to a conventional incarceration? Is it better or is it worse? Now, the data that I got from the state of Colorado, which I read, which I just accept, okay, is that it's better for these alternative programs, but it's not all that much better. It isn't that the recidivism without it is 80% and the recidivism with it is 10%. That's a no-brainer. But what it tends to be is something like, I don't know, I just pick a number out of the hat, but 40% compared to 32%. Now, if that's the right answer, then there's no way we're going to detect this by doing a study in Tompkins County. In the first place, we don't have a control group to do it against. And in the second place, the numbers are so small that with the number of people that we have, you'd never detect the difference between 32% or 40% with any kind of statistical accuracy. So the question is, how can you be convinced? And even if you could break through the barriers and spend a lot of money analyzing this data, I'm not in the least bit convinced you'd find anything that would really be convincing, that an opponent couldn't tear to pieces. But to me, the number that I found that was the most convincing, and again, I don't know where it came from, so I'm just telling you what I read, was the difference in cost between, I mean, let's suppose that the two things are the same recidivism. They don't work any better. They work the same. The difference in cost was very strong. That wasn't on the margin. That they would say that the difference in cost between going to an alternatives program and going to an incarceration program was like 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 or something like that, big numbers. And so at least that's where I would put the emphasis of analysis on, and not to stop worrying about the details about recidivism. I mean, if you wanted to say, is our program reasonable, I think what I would tend to do is to try to compare its internal numbers with internal numbers of studies that have done with much larger databases to see if our graduation rates were the same as the graduation rates from other programs, to see how ours stack up with other such programs. But trying to really convince yourself that you were making an important effect on the recidivism, I think, is just looking for something that isn't going to be there.
Kathy and then Nathan.
Thank you. This is, I think, a good warm-up for the discussions. And I was really glad to hear Peter talk about it in terms of numbers. When Carl Haynes came and talked to us tonight, he pulled out of the report, the joint report from the universities, the TC3 numbers, because he wanted to highlight the impact on families in the community. And there's a way that, for example, I look at economic development in terms of that base unit, the citizen, and how it impacts the citizen. And I think that Peter's onto something here, because there's a way that we can look at ATI programs and their ripple effect in a community. It's hard to measure, but, you know, we talk in Health and Human Services about leveraged dollars. I think that maybe there's other perspectives and other ways of measuring than having to look specifically at recidivism because, well, as we started out the meeting talking about the ripple effect on our community of an incident that resulted in the shooting and killing of a member of our community, and all of us around this table have an idea of a portion of what that impact is on all of us. And the Black community, it has a tremendous impact. So just think about how the ripple effect can be mitigated simply by being exposed to some of the programs that we could improve the measurable results of. I'm not saying I don't want to find ways to improve our programs, but I kind of tend to agree with Peter that I like what you said about it's not the Holy Grail, because it's difficult to boil it down to just recidivism, because people's lives are touched in this community whenever we have programs that give people resources in how to interact in less destructive ways.
Nathan?
Yeah, I mean, that's thank you for your remarks, Peter and Kathy. I mean, you bring up good points. And that's when I was talking about how I thought this was successful after hearing this report, I mean, I was thinking of things like, I mean, just looking at the educational outcomes. I'm going to just talk very briefly about these numbers here. I mean, for the graduates of the felony drug court, for example, I mean, these people have completed their substance abuse treatment. They've maintained abstinence from drug use. You know, they're tested on a regular basis, over long periods of time, a couple of years, and already they've been clean. So that already is a huge success. That's a huge success. But not only that, but a lot when these people started the program, 32 had full-time employment, 10 had part-time employment, 26 were totally unemployed. And when you're unemployed, that's a big reason for one to commit crime so that they can, even just get by, right? Now, looking at employment status at exit, full-time, 57 had full-time employment, 7 had part-time jobs, only 4 unemployed. I mean, so that's a huge number. So that 26 unemployed down to 4 unemployed. 32 with full-time jobs when they started, 57 with full-time jobs after. So I mean so not only have they maintained their abstinence from drug use, but they've also have better employment outcomes, which will reduce the recidivism rates. So I think that you guys are right that there's other ways of looking at success, and for me that was a big one. Now of course these are small numbers, but that's but 30 people in our communities, that is big.
Thank you, Nathan. We've spent a lot of time on this. I think it's worth it. I think it's important. It's a core part of our approach to criminal justice over the past 10 years, it's been asked a number of times, how does this compare not to recidivism, not to even to other programs, but how does it compare to jail? If we're not evaluating the jail at this point, so maybe that really is the right comparison. We will continue to have these conversations, and I think it's important. Dina did a terrific job on a very complicated whole area. In addition to other work she's doing at DSS, and we didn't have to spend county resources on an external study. That may be something we might bite the bullet and do if we really feel we need other information. But let me, Leslin and then Peter. So anyway, I just want to say I'm pleased that we're having this discussion.
Yeah.
I think it's really important. This is just the start of this discussion. So, Leslin.
Martha, you said most of what was on my mind. Having chaired public safety for a number of years, and the chairs before me, this has been an issue we've been grappling with, and they have been any variation of questions that needed to be answered. I know there's a huge looming issue about cost of these programs, if they're cost-effective, and I would ask that if people have very specific questions that they think will get to whatever the answers they're looking for, it's helpful to sort of turn those in, because often when we have tried to do this, what you find out is there's so many other variables attached to, it's not just a straight comparison of, okay, one day here versus one day there. It's so much more. Attorney's fees, travel, this, that. There's just so many other variables attached to it, some of which are unanswerable. It's hard to find an answer to. So that's one of the things, because then otherwise we're going to be continuing to float around trying to figure out where to go with this one. But I know cost is the issue. I'm hearing that it is. And we're going to try our best to address this at a committee level. But if you have some specific things you want, you're looking for, it's helpful to share with the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Peter?
Yeah, I want to say that in my in the remarks I made before, I did not in any way want to be seen as being critical of Dina, is that her name, the woman who did the study. I think that it seemed like a fine, complete study where she, as we say in my business, massaged the data as much as she possibly did and tried to squeeze hard, to squeeze every little piece of information out of it. On the other hand, you can't complain about a study that didn't make comparisons that were not available to the person who did the study. So that's just the way it is. But I think it looked to me like a complete job where she examined everything and answered every question that you might have given all the data that was at her disposal.
The end of your report?
That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Chair.
This might be a long report night here. No, I'll try to make it short. Nice one. Nice one, Brian. WDIC did meet on the 24th of February. Unfortunately, I could not be there. And like Jim, I have a doctor's note signed by several of them. However, I did get updated on what occurred at the meeting. The bulk of the meeting was spent discussing the handicap accessible parking and ADA regulations here in our county lot. There is still some more research. Sean Marta Moore, the department head, director of the Human Rights Commission, is doing some research on the ADA law that's specific to that so that we can work to be as compliant as we can be for that. The other thing that there's been some discussion around is the use of the Martin Luther King Street name, which is a dual name with State Street. And so I will make sure that the information about the legality of that name of the street gets to administration and to all of us, because it is registered with the New York State Postal Service, and it is the name of the street as well as State Street. But I will make sure that there's a memo that comes indicating that, so that there's no confusion on whether we can or cannot use that name. One of the things I wanted to bring up on my WDIC report is the at our last meeting, our last legislature meeting, we got an invitation, I think, from Carlos concerning the immigration reform caravan that was stopping in Ithaca, did on February 18th, and I know a number of you were at that meeting at the Women's Community Building, as well as spoke. On March 21st, there is a rally, March for Immigration Reform and Rally in Washington, D.C. So the work continues, and all are invited to attend. If you're interested, I don't have all the information about who to contact in getting carpooling or getting a ride up there. There's information that one can have. I don't know if you have that information, Kathy, on where to go.
I think the Workers' Rights Center would be able to steer you.
Workers' Rights Center will be able to steer you there. The people-friendly workplace climate survey is still being worked on. I think it's in its 426th iteration, but we're hoping to be done with it relatively soon. WDIC and our project assistant, Sarah, continues to do amazing work partnering in our community on the recruitment issues with civil service prep training and so on and so forth. Our next meeting is scheduled for, I don't remember when, some point in March.
Fourth Wednesday,
March 24th. It's the day after the retreat at the Human Services Building.
Thank you, Leslie. Kathy, then Frank.
Thank you. Just quickly, in reference to the Immigrants' Rights Coalition dinner, Leslie spoke, and she was in my opinion, the best speaker of the evening.
Oh, Kathy.
It was very moving, and it was a really interesting crowd. I even saw somebody that resembled Kevin actually serving in the serving line at one point, representing Tompkins County really well. So
he only gave me one piece of chicken.
It's a deduction.
That red hat.
Resembled Kevin, that would be Jonathan. Frank.
Kevin, did you give her a census form as well? Leslin, I wanted to compliment you. If you had any influence on that wonderful article that was in the paper that profiled so many people recently, that it was really well done, and I think it brought a lot of information out that one does not normally get exposed to.
I would love to take credit for it, but I can't.
Well, it was really well done.
No. It was, and it really did highlight not the usual folks we know about in the community, but they are people who are leaders in this community doing amazing work, and it was good to have them recognized. And kudos to the Journal for making it happen.
Including our own Sean Martel Moore.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much, Leslin. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a somewhat brief report this evening. The committee will be meeting, pardon me, on March 10th. A couple of agenda items that I hope will make it there. One is I've been working with Sean Galbraith down at the, I'm going to call it by the wrong
cancer
name, the Breast Cancer Alliance. Thank you.
Cancer
Resource Center. We want to bring a resolution forward that outlines support for retaining the old way of doing mammograms, not the currently proposed list that came out of the CDC, because there's a lot of concern, including from yours truly, that that may not adequately address the suggested guidelines may not adequately address some of the issues, and we still want to encourage people to continue, women to continue to have mammograms at around age 40 and not push it off. Anyway, that's one of the issues that will be coming up. Second is, I'm not sure that this will hit the agenda, but there's been some discussion at the state level on this Family Health Care Decisions Act. If you don't have a health care proxy, there may be some latitude being given that Betty Falco was telling me about regarding permitting others to make health care decisions. And it came out of the New York State Association as well as a federal association. It hasn't all been worked out yet, but it's an opportunity for even a doctor to make a health care decision if you don't have a relative. And there are some individuals that are in that situation. I hope to have some more information on that by the committee meeting, because that could be pretty interesting to discuss. I want to thank those of you that stepped forward, David McKenna in particular, and Jim Dennis, to pick up the slack on some of our advisory board appointments. We still have a couple to go, but you know, the Health Committee has more than anyone else, and more than any other committee, it seems, and it's good for us to get some coverage. One of the items that keeps going around and round is the impact of the governor's budget, the proposed budget, on health care and health care in general, youth programs, the concern about the impact on nursing homes and nursing facilities. We'll be hearing more of that. I hope Mike is right that they get off their you know what's and are able to pull this together by April 1st. But, you know, hope springs eternal, because I think it would go a long way towards relieving some stress with our departments as well as all of the agencies that come through our committee. I want to remind you, I put a poster up there, I want to remind you once again about the March 6th prescription drug, the pharmaceutical collection that will take place at TCAT from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you have any old prescriptions, even ones from your pets, believe it or not, they will collect them there. One of the changes, and I believe you heard this before, one of the changes from the original proposal was that they will not accept sharps. They will only accept old pills, basically. Needles. They won't accept needles, which was part of the original proposal, but will not be part of this. excuse me. One last item, and I appreciate what Martha said at the beginning about Bart DeLuca. I know that several of us served with Bart when he was the commissioner of mental health. I know Mike did as well. Very fine gentleman. Managed to squeeze 10 cents out of every nickel, and he always was able to get money from the state. Always. Don't ask us how. But all the years that I was on budget, and of course I've been associated with the mental health department for quite some time because of the committee, Bart was a real gentleman, and he was very innovative. A lot of the programs we have today were as a result of his, or have been as a result of the work that he started. And that's not to take anything away from Bob DeLuca. Bob is carrying on a very fine tradition. Those of you that did not know Bart missed an opportunity to play poker with one of the best poker players I've ever played with.
Yes, he was.
So it's really a sad loss. And I appreciate you taking the time at the beginning of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks. If there's any questions, I'll try to. Just a reminder, the 10th is our next committee meeting.
Dooley, and you have Resolution G also.
Oh, right. Thank
you. Dooley?
Frank, the pharmaceutical collection at TCAT, do you know if that will be under shelter? The weather's supposed to be good this weekend, but if it isn't, is it a drive-through?
I think it's going to be a drive-through.
I had some people ask me about that, and I wasn't sure. Thank you.
The other thing, if you can, I mean, read that poster. They won't take mercury thermometers or anything with mercury in it. Yes, I believe it will be under shelter. I think it's going to be a drive-through right through where the buses are, actually.
Thank you. Resolution G.
Resolution G, appropriation from contingent fund for terminal pay reimbursement mental health department, and I so move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Dooley seconds, and this is a short form roll call. Are there any questions, any discussion? Dooley?
Frank, if there are four employees who terminated their employment, could we insert the word four in the first whereas?
Sure. Yeah.
And since you're the seconder, I assume that's friendly.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, let's vote.
Ms. Weaver?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you very much, Frank.
You're welcome.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dooley Kiefer, Chair.
We're meeting this Friday, March 5th at 9:30 a.m. And in addition to what Jonathan Wood mentioned a couple of hours ago, that we'll be hearing about the recycling future in the county, we're focusing on the Highway Division and in particular our 2010 road construction program. So again, if you want to know about that in some detail, please come to the committee meeting.
Thank you. Any questions? Frank?
Question and a comment. Can you say what the recycling thing is again on Friday?
Sure.
Jonathan and Barbara will be there.
Right. We will be reporting. As you probably know, there was a request for proposals to operate the recycling Solid Waste Center.
Gotcha.
And we'll be discussing what we are seeking and what we receive.
Okay, perhaps. Dewey, this is the comment. With the snow that we've had, and everybody's been complimenting the our work crews and the road crews, I wanted to let you know of a situation that I heard from at least five people that use the long-term parking at the airport. And I even had a call from somebody who was in Florida and on her way back and wanted to make sure it was taken care of. With all of the snow that had been piled up, there was a concern about whether or not the cars in the long-term parking could get out because of the amount of snow, and there wasn't an opportunity to literally remove it. During the last couple of days, Roxy and Bob Nicholas and Keith, whose last name just went by me, who is the director of the parking lot, arranged for help from, you know, our work crews in probation. Nathan, take a bow. The two county work crews that we have under supervision were up shoveling all that snow so the cars could get out. And I think we ought to give credit where credit is due for some of the help that was provided. They worked till 9 o'clock at night. Some of these flights were coming in at 11 o'clock. And, you know, some of the folks that were getting off them were not in any shape to be shoveling 4 and 5 feet of snow from in front of their vehicles. So, thank you.
I didn't know that. Thank you for telling us
well,
all.
Well, it's sometimes the county works well. Actually, all the time.
Most of the time. Come on.
Sorry about that.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Dooley. Capital Plan Review Committee, the committee has not met since the last legislature meeting. We meet next on March 11th, Thursday at 3:30. So we do have a member filed resolution. Dooley, would you like to pull out revised resolution H?
Yes. This is resolution in opposition to the new New York State tax imposed retroactively on all local industrial development agencies as a means to help close the state's budget deficit. I'd like to move that.
Mike seconds that. Did I hear you use the word new twice?
Yes, you did. One lowercase and one uppercase for New York State.
Understood. Okay, Kathy and then Jim.
Thank you. Do we have any idea what this tax would represent for our IDA revenues? It looks like it applies to 2008 revenues or a portion of 2008 revenues.
Yes. The administrator knows exactly what it will
be. It's $35,000. Yeah. I think that's the assessment on our IDA. It's in the neighborhood of $35,000.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Jim?
Billy, did you revise your own resolution?
One of our colleagues who sits very near you did.
I want to thank you very much for writing this, Dooley, and bringing this to us. NYSEC had suggested something like this, and it's great that you got it to us in time to put on the agenda. Nathan, you had your hand up?
Yeah. I just wanted to say that I'm obviously so supportive of this resolution. I'm just in awe that the justification or the types of justifications that have been used to impose this fee. Like, well, this is $35,000 for all of the services we've been providing you. For example, you sending us reports and then us sending that report back to you.
Yes.
I mean, that's. I mean, it really, for all I'm concerned, we should pay them a 35-cent postal fee, not a $35,000 tax. Yeah.
And since it's submitted electronically, I'm not even sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Justified.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
That's right. Any other comments or questions? You ready to vote? All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Do we have a motion on the minutes of the previous meeting? Frank moves it. Carol seconds. All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Do I have a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of real estate negotiations? Jim moves. Pat seconds. I would like to say before we vote on that, we will take a five-minute break. And when we come back out, we expect to take no action after the executive session. So any questions, comments? All in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. We will meet back here in 5 minutes. Thank you.